All right. Donna Mack is with us here this morning, and she is, of course, from DMAC Voice and Media Communications. Good morning, Donna.
Dom, you play such great music,
Thank
I have
you.
To tell you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I tuned in on the drive-in, and I heard Karen Carpenter, that mm-hmm. voice.
Oh, my God. That voice is synonymous with the 70s and 80s, and I'll tell you, boy, one of my favorite groups of all times, the Carpenters. And unfortunately, as I said, years ago, she passed away with, due to non-eating and stuff, all that stuff. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about, yes, we do have some good music. I do have some great music in our library. So how's Donna Mack doing today?
I'm doing well. And we talked a little bit a little while ago before, the microphones
mm-hmm.
went on.
Yes.
About are you ready for the holiday?
Yes.
Nope.
No, everybody seems to be at that last minute hustle and bustle right before.
You always try, but mm-hmm. there's something to be said about the day before, a couple of days
yeah.
before, and digging in, getting yourself into the hustle and the bustle.
Yeah.
And then the spirit begins.
That's for sure. Yeah, exactly. But it all makes sense. I mean, here he is a month beforehand when the hustle and bustle started, right after Thanksgiving. And
I fight that.
Yeah, I know.
It's, yeah.
I wish we could go back to that day, the Black Friday. I mean, I didn't have to worry about going to any shopping centers, but,
right.
but let's do it all over again.
Did you ever shop at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning?
No.
I have
you?
To tell you. Yeah, oh, yeah. 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because my sisters always did it. And I said, all right, what am I missing?
Mm-hmm.
I must be missing something here. So I went out 1 year and, oh my goodness, fought the crowds. You think it's going to be slower and quieter and easier at that time. Not so.
Uh-uh.
Then the following year, I got a little wiser, and I headed out a little earlier, and I cut all my coupons, and the first place I was going to go was Walmart, and
mm-hmm.
the second place I was going to go was Michael's Crafts,
yep.
and I got to Walmart, and there was no parking in the parking lot. I was going to have to park way, way, way out at the street. So, Walmart is typically a very busy store, but
sure.
it was 10 times busier than any busy day.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I have to go. I can't. Just looking at the door, the doors hadn't even opened yet, and the lines were out by the hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'm not going there. So, okay, so I turned around, got my coupons, and I went to Michael's. And I was fighting, the carriages. There were so many people inside of Michael's. I was so very claustrophobic. But I navigated. It took me at least twice,
mm-hmm.
Twice as long as it normally would have taken me to find my items. And I got out, got up into the checkout area, and she tallied things up
mm-hmm.
for me, and I gave her my coupons, and she looked at me and she said, no, these coupons are only good after 9.
Oh, no. Oh, God. I'm not going now.
right. So what are you supposed to do at
yeah.
that point? So I bought the things
yeah.
and I tried to stay as calm, cool, and collected as possible and made the decision never to do Black Friday at 5 o'clock in the morning again.
Oh my God. No, luckily I have not gone to Black Friday. No, I mean, unfortunately, the last couple of years I've been right here on Black Friday.
Right.
So it makes it easier. Well, if you can hear that voice, you can hear the voice, you may have heard her before on some other different radio stations. First of all, Donna, thank you for coming down today. A little bit of background on who Donna Mack is.
Well, I used to work at 1320.
Yes, you did.
Yes. I'm trying to think of the years. I think the year was 1981.
Mm-hmm.
81 into 82. So tell me who the program director was at that
probably
time.
Probably John Avery.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, he was a great boss.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked Saturday mornings
mm-hmm.
because I had a full-time job elsewhere. In fact, it was a crazy time. I was young, so I had all the energy in the world, and I worked Monday through Friday full-time elsewhere. And then I worked here Saturday mornings, and then I worked elsewhere, another part-time job
mm-hmm.
on Saturday evenings and occasional Sunday afternoons. Those were the days,
sure.
seven days a week you could actually do that. And Saturday mornings, it was a music program here on 1320.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also this trade program.
Yeah,
people would try to sell
yeah,
their goods.
Yeah, it was Hiram's Country Store with Frank Titus.
Oh, that doesn't ring a bell.
Frank was the, there may have been a couple of other things going on. I know Frank was the news director at the time.
Okay. But it was great because you could really cut your teeth on radio. Yeah. You could learn how to talk up a song, you mm-hmm. know? And
yeah.
You could learn the engineering, the board, the music, in addition to, you know, understanding your audience mm-hmm. and actually stopping down to chat and mm-hmm. be yourself and be as calm, cool, and natural mm-hmm. as possible, because don't we know in radio it's the more natural you can be, the better, because that's right. who people relate with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as you got to ARA, and I remember I started in May 5th of 1984 at ARA. I had I did a music program on Saturdays and Sundays, and later went on to my own program during the day. But you also before that, or even after that, you were also on a bunch of other radio stations as well.
Yes. I was born and raised in Cumberland, Rhode Island, mm-hmm. so not far from here, and I had a bad Rhode Island accent. Cumberland. I was from Valley Falls, right?
You're a Rhode Islander.
Yeah, right. Went to college for a year, didn't know what I wanted to mm-hmm. do, and so I decided to go to Connecticut School of Broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, there was only one, and it was in Hartford, mm-hmm. right? There wasn't a Connecticut School of Broadcasting in Mass and elsewhere like there is now. And I started my radio career in Connecticut, which was a great place to start, Dom, and I'll tell mm-hmm. you why. Because for some reason in Connecticut, they know how to speak, right? Mm-hmm. You'd think that they would have a really funny accent because they're sandwiched between New York and Boston.
Right.
But they don't. They speak really generically. So no matter where you are, I mean, that's the goal of a radio person, to try to speak generically. So no matter where you are in the country, you don't sound like you have an accent.
Right.
So I lived in Connecticut for the first 2 years. And those were the days also when the big broadcasters were Tom Brokaw, mm-hmm. Jane Pauley. I really listened to the people who were on the air. And that's really how I learned how to speak, by emulating others, and luckily, you know, being in Connecticut. So after I left Connecticut, I came back to Rhode Island and worked at a couple of little radio stations. Can I say the call
sure
letters?
You can.
WGNG, which is no longer.
55 gold. Yeah,
that was a tiny part-time job I had for probably a few weeks. Mm-hmm. From there, I got
right
picked up.
Right down on the bottom of that hill where it always floods.
Right. But from there, I picked up a full-time job at WKRI.
Mm-hmm. West Warwick.
And I think everybody knows Gary DeGray.
Sure.
Well, I've been in the business for so long. I worked with his father.
Mm-hmm.
Gene,
sure.
So he was doing mornings, and I followed Gene at 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. How funny is that?
And later on, Gene, actually, after he got out of radio, he was actually, we worked in the auto dealership for a while.
Yes. Yeah, well, his family is affiliated, yeah. Absolutely. Right. And what a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful person, again, to emulate mm-hmm. and to have fun with. He mm-hmm. was just, you know, really down to earth. Great guy and serious broadcaster. So I was very, very lucky. And then from there, I went down to Westerly for mm-hmm. a while and cut my teeth.
ERI, Westerly, ERI 104.
ERI and ERI AM and FM mm-hmm. at that particular time. And it was a really interesting time to be in the business as well, because during that time, the FM radio station changed. They grew by leaps and bounds. So they went from a 16,000-watt radio station, which permeated probably up to maybe the Hope Valley or West Greenwich area, and then maybe down into, say, Groton, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So they went from 16,000 watts and built a whole big new tower, and they turned into a 50,000-watt mm-hmm. radio station, which was just an incredible
sure.
thing to experience and to watch. And we hired consultants from Atlanta to turn it into a real radio uh-huh. station. And I was doing morning drive. So I was doing news and information and, you know, typical getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, driving down there. But, again, great place to cut your teeth and to learn. Uh-huh. And to learn. It's all about learning. And then from there, I was fortunate enough to make the move to Providence, and that was the big time,
uh-huh,
right?
Sure.
And now I had been in the business for so long, but I'm still only in my 20s, so I was still a young woman. And I landed a job with the traffic folks, and I'm trying to think of
Mike Sheridan.
Traffic Net,
Mike Sheridan, Mike Canarello.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was doing traffic for maybe 5, 6, mm-hmm. 7 radio stations in the morning. And I'm laughing because, can I tell you the funniest traffic story? So I would get up and get into the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Get into the plane. And I sat in the front with the pilot, and Mike Sheridan sat in the back. So, and we would have to have headphones on, and we would listen to our cues. And Joni Pfeiffer was one of women. She was doing morning drive at a radio station down in, I want to say, the Fall River area, WM something. You can't remember every single station.
And, probably MYD or something like that.
Yeah, okay. And Gary DeGrade, mm-hmm. again, was the morning guy of Light 105, and that was one of the radio stations that I did traffic on. But it was a beautiful June morning, and I did not like being in the plane. Again, claustrophobic.
Those little four-seaters.
You know, right. But 2.5, 3 hours every single gosh darn morning, right? And one morning, and we're nearing the end of the morning. It was maybe, I don't know, maybe 8:30 in the morning, because mm-hmm. I believe we were up till maybe 8:45,
right.
A couple of minutes before 9 o'clock. And blue sky. And out of the blue, we heard and felt this bang, boom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And guess what the pilot said?
I can just imagine what he said.
What the hell was that?
Yeah.
Now, if the pilot is going to say, pardon my French, by the way,
yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
Now, I'm trying not to flip out, but I just said, can we get down?
Yeah.
Can we just land the plane? And I never found out what it was.
It's still to this day?
Never found out what it was. It probably was a bird. We probably hit, because those things happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, you hear of small, tiny planes hitting birds and, mm-hmm. and crashing.
Sure.
But luckily, Gary and I, when I was doing the traffic reports on Light 105, he and I had a good rapport back and forth. And he was looking for a new news person, a new co-host.
Mm-hmm.
So, long story short, he ended up calling me
mm-hmm.
after, you know, one of my traffic reports one day and said, you want to come in for an interview? You know, I like your voice. I like your personality. Let's see if we can make it work. And I was at Light 105 mm-hmm. for the next 5 years.
Now, back then, if I remember correctly, it was Light 105 down down on the mall down in Providence, down on
Westminster Street.
Yeah, right.
Ninth floor.
Yeah, the Lapham Building, right?
The what building?
The Lapham Building, Lapham.
I don't remember that, but we were right next to Tilden Thurber.
Yep, okay.
And then opposite was Grace Church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and on crazy days, I would get out of work at 10 o'clock in the morning, tired, because, again, it was a morning radio job. I would go and take a walk over to the church, which was just so beautiful to sit and
relax.
Recharge. And, yeah, because when you do morning radio, as you know, you need your energy.
You're not kidding.
You're not kidding. How do you do it, Dom? You tell us.
Me?
Yeah. I mean, do you take power naps during the day?
I try to.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't get so busy during the day doing other things. Sometimes you don't get a chance to.
Mm-hmm.
But once in a while, if I, you know, around 1 o'clock or something like that, you know, I'll feel myself like, okay, all right. And I'll shut my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's either 20 minutes or it could be an hour later. But after that, I mean, I think the guy that comes on after me, Paul Healy, always says, the best thing in life, one of the second best thing in life, is taking a nap in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's true, because you get that recharge. You get that second burst of energy.
Otherwise, after 6 p.m., you're just dead.
You're dead, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you miss life,
mm-hmm.
because there are things that happen in the late afternoon, early evening, or mid-evening even.
And I'm more of an afternoon, nighttime person. You know, I was. And now, you know, I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I'm usually in bed by 9:15, 9:30.
Which isn't so bad.
Right.
That's not so bad. But I used to, you know, I'm more of a morning person.
Yeah.
And I used to really lose my energy by late day, early evening, and never was able to get used to that morning. But I did morning radio for quite some time in Westerly, in Providence. And then after I left Providence, I ended up in Boston. From 1990 to 1997, I worked with Greater Media Radio. And that was also an interesting time to be in the business because at that time it was just an AM and an FM. But rules and regulations changed according to the FCC. And after those rules and regulations changed, radio stations were able to own up to 25% of the market. So Greater Media gobbled up, bought another FM radio station. So I actually got hired to do Morning Drive on their sister FM, which at that time was 96.9, and it was a country station. I had never done country music before. And, you know, great job. But again, kind of challenging for me personally because my children were born in the 90s during that time. The commute, I had just bought a home in southeastern Massachusetts, so the commute was very, very tough. You know how we just had 100 inches of snow this past year?
Yeah.
One of the years I worked on that radio station was that year where we had the second largest snowfall of the year. I think we had 104 inches that particular year. And so, yeah, you know, but and it was also tough being in Boston because I would want to stay and do other things, but I had a child here back at home. And you don't go to Boston, come home, and then go back later on in the day. You just don't do it. So, and we chose at that time not to make the move to Boston. We chose to stay in the southeastern Massachusetts area.
Now, those Boston stations, so what stations were the call letters for the back then? You remember those?
WBCS.
Okay, BCS.
Boston's Country Station.
Right, okay.
Which is no more.
Right.
Very interesting, too, because that station, just as it was ready to go on the air and make a big country splash in Boston, the week before, another country FM radio station made the splash and made the decision to go country. And so we're looking at ourselves going, we just made all these plans. We just spent all this time, energy, effort, money, again, consultants to do it and to do it right. Here it was, major market radio. What do we do? Do we scrap those plans and go to plan B? Or do we go head-to-head and have two country radio stations in Boston? So we decided to do it. We decided to go country. And the whole entire time they were country, they were always the second, the number
two. VBF?
Well, it was VBF
that
turned into KLB.
Okay, yeah. Were and they at the top of the Prue at the time?
They were on top of the
Lauren
crew at
Wally?
The time. Yes, Lauren and Wally did country. And Adams and Doyle did country. And I was there. Morning radio chick.
you know,
I was the news person, and I was the traffic and entertainment reporter. And so long story short, now what has happened? So KLB prevailed. BCS changed formats, and they were the business station for many years, and they have since changed formats. But so 96.9 is gone. BCS is gone. And what they did is they combined the best of on-air staff and the best of country, because in Boston, come on, you can only have one really great country station. And guess what? They're a really great country station. And they ended up landing on, I'm trying to think of the digital, I think it's 102.3 WKLB.
Okay, yeah.
Which was formerly a classical station.
That's right. It was originally.
You know, you can't keep up. You can't keep. All I know is that I got out of full-time radio because after Boston, had my second child, ended up landing a great job on 93.3 in Providence, and I was there from 97 all the way to 2009. But the full-time gig ended about 2003. And it worked out perfectly, I'd say, because I was ready. You know, I had been a disc jockey and or a news person and an editor and a mistress of ceremonies and a whole, you know, a radio woman since I was 18 years old, Dom. Mm-hmm. And I believe there's a life expectancy. And I shouldn't automatically, maybe I shouldn't have assumed that, but I was also ready for a new challenge, a greater challenge. I always had this yearning to do more, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was.
Right.
And I think a lot of people feel like that, whether they're in broadcasting or whether they're in any kind of career. They have a yearning to do more, but how do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you make that transition? Sometimes you just need to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's a combination of stepping in and doing it and making a plan as best as you can to, and I have a formula. Are you ready for the formula?
Sure. Yeah.
I think this might actually be helpful for some of your listeners. If you want to make a transition in life and career from where you are to where you would like to go, you can use this as a template, all right? Step one, it's a four-step process. Step one is to just look at your existing skills, right? What do you bring to the table mm-hmm. up till this point? And that's education and that's experience. And you combine that with what I call step two, your God-given natural abilities. And I call it that because what lights you up? You know, what do you get excited about? And what comes easily to you? All right, so that's step two. So again, step one is your current experience and education. Step two is your God-given natural abilities. Step three is to actually take time and think of what do they need? Like, what does the world need mm-hmm. now? That almost sounds like a song, doesn't it?
It does.
Don't start singing,
no,
Dom.
No, probably not. Right. I shouldn't have, anyways.
What does the world need now? Mm-hmm. Where are the holes that I could fill as I continue to grow and evolve? Because the world grows and evolves, and it does change, right? They didn't need so many female radio people. Mm-hmm. When I first got into the business, I was the only female person on the first four radio stations
right.
I worked on. Then all of a sudden, I had competition, right? And by the time I got out, I had a heck of a lot of competition.
Sure.
And they were commanding less money. And they needed, you know, right, it just was what it was. Mm-hmm. So to go back to the formula, you combine your God-given natural abilities with your existing skills. And you take time and figure out what the world needs now. And what do you think the fourth element, the very important fourth element is? And I'm wondering if the audience is also wondering what the fourth element is. It really is, I don't want to say the most important, but vitally important.
The first thing that came to my mind is, background of family, something like that, or, you know, your values.
Well, a support system is very important no matter where you are, right? But the fourth element, Dom, is how can I earn a living?
There you go. Yeah, it's true.
I need to earn a living. You know, my kids are, one just got out of college and one just got into college. And they're so smart because I'm of the era where, you know, I'm telling my children, do what you love. Make sure you pick a career that lights you up.
Sure.
Right? Don't automatically choose something just because you think you can make money. But my older daughter, very wise, she's like, yes, and Mom, I want to do what I love and I don't want to be a starving artist.
True.
Right? So there's a very fine line between getting into a new career and knowing that if you combine the first three steps and can start to make a little bit of money, the other money will come. Right? Because it takes time.
Sure it does.
You can't just go from zero to 60 in, you know, a month.
Mm-hmm.
It does take time to build a new career, to transition into something brand new. So again, to wrap it up, step one is to combine your existing experience and education. Step two is to be very clear on your God-given natural abilities and what lights you up. Step three is to take time and think. How can I serve? How can I best help? And be of service to the universe, so to speak, at this time of life, in life. And step four is, how can I earn a living?
Right, exactly.
Because while it's about them, it's about me too.
Of course it is, yeah.
Right.
Well, no, you said briefly, you just said the old SNE, 93.3.
Yes.
Was it, where was the station back then? Was it downstairs the old Outlook Company in Providence, or was it a different
location? Oh, my goodness. Well, remember I told you I worked at WARA back in 81, 82, and I worked here Saturday morning, and I worked someplace else Saturday night? That's who I worked for Saturday night. And at that time, that's where 93.3 was, Outlet Building. But they had a very interesting legal identification. Their legal ID was Taunton Providence.
Right, yeah.
So they broadcasted half of the day in Providence at the Outlet Building on Dorrance Street. And then they broadcasted the other half of the day, the other 12 hours, I believe from noon to midnight in Taunton. So it all depended when they wanted me. Saturday nights, I would travel. We were living in Coventry, Rhode Island at that time. I was a new bride. I was 20 years old. And on Saturday nights, I would drive to Taunton. And they were in, I'm trying to think of the name of the building. It's a beautiful building right in downtown Taunton in the green. And then the Cooper Building.
Yeah, it was probably right next to the courthouse. The courthouse was out. Yeah.
Yes.
Because there was WPEP was down there for a little bit. Little while. There was an AM station down there. As I always wonder, because I actually interned for a little while at SNE back in the mid-80s as well, under Holland Cook, who was another PRO guy who used to be on from 7 to midnight.
Yes.
And I remember Bob, well, his real name is Bob Holland, but Bob is actually, I think he might be retired now, because he was working at WTOP in Washington for a number of years. But he was down there. In fact, I haven't seen Holland Cook in a long, long time, but we're going to take a quick break. We're here with Donna Mack. Did you ever work with the legendary Salty?
We were in the same room together numerous times.
Okay.
We were never at the same radio station at the same time, but can I tell you?
Sure.
He was a flirt. Salty was he loved the girls.
That's because his wife Mickey was at home and down in Narragansett at the time. That's why.
What a talent. What a talent to know him and to have been in the same room. What a presence.
Yeah.
Right? And I listened to his son in Boston. And it's just so cool that has been passed down from that generation to this generation. And
you know who?
What a pro.
You know who? Who got his start with Salty? Gary DeGrade.
Yes.
Gary was the person that he was always helping out Salty all the time. So I remember Gary DeGrade. I met him years ago. Gary had an afternoon program on Saturdays at PRO. He was upstairs, the Bryan Broadcasting Building there. And I got a chance to see him my first year of college. I actually, he and a bunch of other people helped me with a paper that I was writing as a freshman in college, which it was actually called Radio Stations and Personalities. I went to dozens of radios. I went to about 10 radio stations, and I got an A+ on that. And I had everybody from AM and FM personalities to help me write this paper. It was like 5 pages long, but I always loved it. And then when I went to broadcasting school, I went to the old Rhode Island School of Broadcasting in North Providence. In there, they got me to do news. And it's not news, it's news. It's almost like N-Y-E-W-Z is the
news,
way
news, like views.
That's right. So, it's something that, I've enjoyed all these years.
Were you a radio geek as a kid? Like, was it something that you always wanted to
yes.
do? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm laughing to myself when you were talking about going to these radio personalities and them helping you with your paper. Well, of course, because radio personalities love talking about
themselves.
Do. you know? And it is a cool thing to do, and it is a great, rich life mm-hmm. to have. So that was, what a wonderful way to infiltrate mm-hmm. yourself into the business. And it's all about not what you know, it's who you know in the mm-hmm. beginning. So good for you for doing that, especially as a kid.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like I said, and they were very impressed because in college, you know, I took all the, you know, all the courses, the public speaking, the voice and articulation, you and did. All these things, you know, and I was the president of the radio station at CCRI for instead of being there for 2 years, I took extra courses, and I stayed there for 4 years because as I got out of broadcasting school in 1980, I wanted to stay with the station. I was having fun. Mm-hmm. So I took like one or two classes per semester, and I went, okay. I mean, I even, because I think they put me as president my junior year, I think it was. Yeah. And it was called KBC, Night Broadcasting Club. And then I changed the call as a WKBC, and we all had our own green T-shirts, you know, which was the colors, green and gold.
Yep.
But long story short, that's where I really shined, because we would bring in our albums back then. We were using an old board, an old console from Coventry High School.
Yes.
One of the people who actually ran that organization was my cousin, who is now out of the business now. He's now in Florida, but he got me started in the business, you know, because he ran that. He was actually a DECA president, distributive education at Coventry mm-hmm. High, and but anyway, to make a long story short, he got me involved in that. He actually gave us the board for Zip.
Wow.
He said, like, it was a 4-channel pot board, and with, you know, all these, you know, and we learned on it. And I was showing the other people that we had, like, okay, this is the way you do it. You could bring your records in here. And then we had a deal with the local record stores in the malls down in Warwick, Century Disc and Midland Records. Mm-hmm. And they used to give us the albums. As long as we mentioned it on the air one time per 2 hours, you're listening to some of your favorite music from Midland Records and Century Discs. And then we had gotten to the bookstore downstairs at CCRI had their own, they had records as well. They had albums. So we would get like, 12 to 15 albums a week.
Wow.
They would bring in.
So it was like your own little nonprofit.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Right. And people wanted to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's terrific. And what a wonderful way for them to promote themselves,
mm-hmm.
right? And to align themselves with a cool radio station with kids who are going to go out and buy their records and
exactly
go to, and frequent their stores. So it was a win-win-win for everybody.
You got that mm-hmm. right. All right. Donna Mack is here. We're going to take a quick break here. We got to take a little break now. It's 9:38. We will check in with meteorologist Jim Corbin, also back with us in just a couple of moments as well. So stay with us.
The year-round farmers market, located at Attleboro Farms on Hickory Road in North Attleboro, has nestled inside for the winter season. Local producers and artisans will be available on Sundays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. with everything from fresh produce, eggs, baked goods, honey, and so much more. I dare say you can pick up those fresh carrots for Sunday dinner and still be home in plenty of time to watch the Patriots play. What could be better than that, I ask you? For more information, call 508-695-7200. Buy fresh, buy local.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? When floodwaters reach your door? When wildfires are engulfing the edge of your neighborhood? Or an earthquake is destroying buildings? Or is the best time, perhaps, today? During a disaster, you may not be able to stay in touch with your family or friends as easily as you think. Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Pawtucket Winter Farmers Market will take place on Saturdays from 9 till 1 p.m., starting November 7th, right straight through May 14th, 2016, at Hope Artist Village, located on Hope Street in Pawtucket. Come light, snow, or shine, the Wintertime Farmers Market will be open. For more information, visit the web at hopeartistvillage.com or simply call 401-312-3850. 650.
The Walpole Brain Injury Support Group meets the second Wednesday of every month from 6:30 to 8 o'clock p.m. The meetings take place in the community room of the Walpole Housing Authority at 8 Diamond Pond Terrace in Walpole. The support group is a forum for survivors and their loved ones where they can share information about their brain injury with a compassionate and understanding peer group. Before attending your first meeting, contact Joanne Susi at 508-735-4756.
So you see, son, good manners are important. Should I go through it again?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Always say please, thank you, you're welcome, and excuse me. Sit up straight, hold doors open, don't speak with your mouth full, keep your elbows off the table. Share your things, play nice, and generally treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Got it?
Got it.
And stop picking your nose.
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But 2 minutes twice a day, making sure they brush their teeth, is easier. And it could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. Visit 2min2x.org to find out more. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
Opening night for the Pawtucket Winter Wonderland is in place and ready to go for Saturday, December the 6th at Slater Park. This dazzling holiday event will feature 500 decorated Christmas trees nestled amongst 20 village buildings located on both sides of the road, around the pond, and winding up the hill. Vehicular traffic will not be allowed between 4 and 8 p.m. so that various activities can take place as you stroll leisurely by these breathtaking displays. For more information, feel free to call 401-726-3185.
All right, meteorologist Jim Corbin now joining us once again with our next check on the forecast. Jim.
Well, Don, we've got high clouds out there dimming the sun, but overall, really good stuff out there. In fact, if you like it warm, again, in late December, you're going to enjoy today's temperatures in the low 50s. The only negative, the winds are picking up. Already seeing winds gusting over 25 miles an hour in many areas. We might see gusts up to 40 this afternoon out of the southwest, though, and that's why we're going to get into the low 50s. Our average high on this date, 39, so we're well above that. Tonight, some rain moving in very late tonight, but if you have evening plans, no problems, upper 40s. And then tomorrow, periods of light rain. It shouldn't be a washout. There's going to be no wild storm or anything, but enough to wet the ground, a few puddles here and there. Mid-50s. That's it, mid-50s. And then Wednesday, some sun early, then clouds late. More rain, somewhat heavier rain, it looks like, Wednesday night into very early Christmas Eve, in other words, Thursday morning. Thursday afternoon, if we get a little sun, we could make a run at the record, which at TF Green in Providence is 64, and that was set a year ago. How about that? And then Friday, Christmas Day, mostly sunny, increasing sun throughout the day. Still warm, but not quite as warm as Thursday, highs in the 50s, and then cold weather over the weekend. Still looks like some point towards New Year's, perhaps our first chance of accumulating snow.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Yeah, really. Yeah, it's exactly right. Donna says, shh, don't say those. Don't say that four-letter word. That four-letter word is not allowed. FCC is listening.
Four-letter word with the Fs, I know. By the way, nice to hear Donna's voice and everything. Donna, can I ask you a question quickly? I know you want to get back with Dawn.
Certainly.
You mentioned Connecticut with accents and stuff, and I grew up in Braintree, you know, just south of Boston, and so I still have a hint of a Boston accent. And my ex-wife was from Connecticut, and then, of course, the New York accent. And she was kind of in between as well, growing up near New Haven. But is there such thing as an accent that is considered the normal? Like, I've heard over the years that the Midwest is the accent. In other words, is everyone's voice an accent, or is there such thing as someone who does not have an accent of any kind?
Well, Midwest, you're right. It's interesting because I did some voiceover work for a company not long ago, and they said most of their Midwestern companies chose my voice because it sounds more Midwest. I think being in the center part of the country is probably where you'll find the least amount of accent, so to speak, Jim. Does that make sense?
Why is that, you think?
Who knows? I mean, you know, it's America. It's so funny, too, because being born and raised in Cumberland, Rhode Island, right there was Attleboro, Massachusetts. And in Attleboro, they had a slightly different accent than we did in Cumberland. In Cumberland, we sounded more Providence, right? And in Attleboro, they sounded a little more Boston.
Just going over the border into Attleboro or North Attleboro, whatever it changes.
It absolutely makes a difference.
Do you think it... now, the, let me ask you, did you have your voice now, and again, you have such a great voice, a soothing voice and everything, did you have it, say, at 10, 12 years old, did you almost know that, ooh, you know, people were telling you, boy, you sound great.
No, absolutely not.
Really?
Absolutely not. Nope, I did not have it then. I think, the natural resonance was always there, but I never thought of it. Nobody ever listened to me and said, you had a nice voice. No. So it was something that I probably, you know, I had it naturally, but you can develop it. You can develop, you know, anything in life. You need to work on it. You need to take where you are naturally and do your best. Like, you know, being a radio person, I needed to do my best to lose my, you know, the R's and the accent.
Yep.
And to do my best to sound as eloquent but natural as possible.
Now, do you always have the same voice, or can you adapt a different, slightly different accent for a different location? Or is it you now, the way you sound, and you're always doing it no matter where you might do a voiceover or what have you?
You're listening to Jim and Dom on WARA. So, you know, was that a little affected? You know, did I, was it a little throatier? Yes.
Well, let's say you did something, say a place in Juneau, Alaska wanted you to do a voice. Would you sound the same as you do now?
Well, it's all about understanding your audience. So, you know, who's their audience? Am I talking to kids? Am I talking to the more gracious, affluent type people? So, I don't know. I think to play it safe, again, the operative word, Jim, is natural.
Yeah.
Is natural.
So would you consider your voice right in the middle? There's almost no accent either way, and I say this in all due respect. I'm not trying to sound like, being critical at all.
No.
But if there's such thing as the correct sound of the English voice, like British or Northern Maine, or, you know, I used to work up in Bangor, you know, they had that. I mean, is there such thing as, like obviously Boston accents and, you know, the R's and everything else. Is
right.
there such thing as a correct accent, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the answer is absolutely yes. And it's not necessarily the voice, but it's the way people pronounce things. You know, you want to add your ings at the end of words. You want to add your r's
yeah.
at the end of words. And for instance, I'm thinking of the state of Oregon. Now, sounds natural, Oregon. But I was raised to say that word Oregon. All right? So the
and
goal.
What is the correct? What's the correct?
Pardon me?
What is the correct pronunciation?
Oregon. Oregon. Yeah.
As opposed to Oregon. Now, yeah. What about, I'll end up this, as Tom always knows I say, but the pronunciation of T-A-U-N-T-O-N, Taunton. Is it Taunton or is it Taunton?
Well, it's funny because when I worked there, I had just left Connecticut and I had just left broadcasting school, so I actually used to overemphasize things and put, you know, too much emphasis in things because I think I was working too hard. You know, I was a kid trying to be perfect. And I remember my boss saying, kill the middle T, because I used to say, you're listening to SNE, Taunton, Providence. And he goes, Taunton? He goes, it's Taunton, Taunton. But now, when I was born and raised in Cumberland, I would have called it Taunton, Taunton. So it's not Taunton, it's Taunton.
It's like some people saying, and I can't stand when I'm listening to somebody on radio or someone doing something when they say Pawtucket or
yeah.
Woonsocket. They know they're not from this area.
Right, yeah. Right.
And also Wareham versus Wareham.
Wareham. Yeah.
Or Rainham. I know I've worked in Rainham, and the townies call it Rainham. If you know, in broadcasting, it's Rainham. It's Rainham, but it's Rainham if you're living in that city, that town.
So I think, again, it all depends on who your audience is, because if you're talking to your townies, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you are in business, for instance, and more people are working virtually in business with others elsewhere, and God only knows where they are. So, you know, if you sound in really Rhode Island or you sound in really Boston, do your best to try to lose some of that. So what they're doing is they're not focusing on how you're saying things. They're focusing on what you're saying. That's where an accent can get in the way, because if you have a really funny accent, mm-hmm. people are focusing on how you're saying things and they're not listening to your content.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Donna. I know you want to get back with Dawn, but I enjoy the conversation. And,
thank you, Jim. Very nice to connect.
Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, Jim. All right. Also, we got some time to talk with Donna about her company, but we have Derek Mulhan also with us this morning. Derek,
good morning. It's my first time on your show.
It is, actually. Well, nice to have you here. Meet Donna Mack.
Hi, Donna. How are you?
Derek Mulhan.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
Pleasure.
You. I was listening in some great pointers. I had two questions.
Yeah.
Is it poinsettia or poinsettia? that's a totally different thing. As I was listening coming up,
poinsettia, actually.
Is it? Okay.
I think it is too, but you know, I was raised poinsettia, so yeah. I'm still a poinsettia girl. Yep.
But I was listening, as somebody who comes on Paul's show and Dominic's, well, this is my first time on Dominic's mm-hmm. show, and I do Attleboro High School sports. Mm. Some really good stuff for me to learn by doing this. But I couldn't help but notice, you know, this call with Jim, a little love connection going on here.
With who?
Jim.
Jim.
Jim sounded very smitten with you.
You know what? I own a communications company. And what do? I help
communicate people with people, yeah.
Communicate with mm-hmm. people. And sometimes it's one-on-one. And sometimes it's before large groups.
Which you were at a little over a month ago. You were at the Chamber of Commerce at an event for them.
Yes, yes. So I teach and help mm-hmm. other people learn mm-hmm. the skills, the existing skills that I have to help them grow. And long story short, why do the majority of people not speak?
Because they're afraid?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? 80% of people have that fear
stage
of speaking
fright,
on
yeah.
stage. And you know what? Do you think that fear of speaking also permeates into our everyday one-on-one connections?
Of course, especially yes. with the kids we're raising, because they don't talk to each other. They text to each other.
Bingo.
Right, exactly.
Bingo. That's why we were talking about evolving your career. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have work for the rest of my life. Right?
And beyond.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Your work is going to live way past. Hopefully, your work is going to live way past. Because I've seen people, you know, they don't know how to interact. We're bringing up a bunch of social misfits.
Right.
I mean, when I was growing up, I had no problem speaking in front of people, singing karaoke. And then when I got into the wrestling business, cutting a promo in front of thousands of people and nothing more than kind of a thong, you know, what do you got to lose? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, cutting promos was easy. But I just wanted to come in. I thought Jim might have been hitting on you, and
well,
I know I'll hear about that later.
Can I address the love thing?
Yep.
There are only two main emotions in the world, and they are what?
Love and hate.
Close. Love and... We just said it.
Cheeseburgers.
What's the opposite of love? Not hate. But why do people choose not to speak?
They're afraid.
Right. Yeah. So there are only two main emotions in the world, and they are love and fear.
Love and fear.
Right. Now, under love, there are a lot of cool things under love, like joy and happiness and caring and empathy and all that good stuff, right? Under fear, there's what? There's hate, mm-hmm. right? There's being self-conscious. There's anger. There's all sorts of stuff. But again, two main emotions, mm-hmm. love and fear. When I teach communication skills, what I do my best to have folks get rid of the fear and speak with love. And that's speaking with confidence. And that's speaking in an effort to acquire a win-win-win for everybody involved. Obviously for you, but also for the other person, that you're speaking with. And ultimately, the other folks, the other people who are being affected. So say you were in work, right? And you're my employee and I'm the boss. So I need to bring you into my office and I need to deliver some challenging feedback, right? I need it to be a win for me because I need to eradicate whatever it is that you're doing, right? But I also want it to be a win for you. I want you to be able to save face, and I want you to be able to walk out of this meeting with your head held high. And really, even though you might have felt a little badly during the conversation, you know that you trust me, that I am looking for a win for you. I don't want to make you feel badly, but you need to understand that this action or whatever it is that you're doing needs to change.
Right.
Okay? And it's also affecting the company because it might be slowing down productivity or it might be affecting the department, right? If something is ongoing within our department, you following me?
No, definitely.
So again, a win for me, a win for you, and a win for whatever else is being affected. So if I move forth with being rude and mean and this has to stop, I'm not moving forth in love. You know, I'm moving forth in fear. I need to eradicate this. I need it to be my way or the highway, right?
Well, I've only been here for 5 minutes and I feel like I've known you for the, you know, and you put me at ease.
Right.
You know, and I haven't known her. So Dom, I'm gonna take off. I just wanted to shake your hand because like I said, I've been listening to this and boy, it was great. And here's a guy who could use a couple of pointers, so.
And putting people at ease is what it's all about. So if you have the love in you, right? If
well,
you
you're have doing the... a heck of a job. And like I said, after 5 minutes, Dom, I mean, how, I mean, I, like I said, I listened to this whole thing this morning. Mm-hmm. I know you had mentioned that she was coming in, and I got a lot of pointers, so thank you.
Derek, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Derek. You know, we've got to have you on again because we're coming down to the end of the... First of all, DMAC Voice and Media Communications, how can people get in touch with you?
dmacvoice.com, dmacvoice.com is my website. My email address is there. My telephone number is there. And all sorts of information on who I am and how I can help.
We got a couple more minutes here. As you said, you went to and did a session with the Chamber of Commerce. I've seen on your site you also have there's videos of you speaking in front of people as well. You really get to know them. Like you said, that fear and love is right out there. You know, but once folks train with you, they're basically what are they able to do better?
Speak good.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, we talked about delivering feedback to your employees, right? That's one thing. So I think the easiest way to answer that question, Dom, is by saying I help people with everything from uncomfortable conversations to formal presentations. Okay, so I help people first and foremost get comfortable in their own skin and then do their best to open up the lines of communication because, the lines of communication are so closed if you're moving forth in fear, whether it be on stage or in a one-on-one communicative situation.
Right. excuse me. And the last couple of things we have, I know recently you've also not only doing radio and promos and stuff like that, but in the last couple of years, I've seen you on television doing some PSAs as well for some of the local radio, some of the local stations as well.
Really? Isn't that interesting? Yes. I do such little television.
Well, I've caught you, you know, you're in a setting in the kitchen talking about your son, or, you know, I think it was something about depression. The script had mentioned
it's
something.
It's substance abuse.
Substance abuse, right.
And I'll tell you, I really hold that subject dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm doing something in January in Norton, and it's to help family members open up the lines of communication, especially if they're dealing with an addict, somebody they love who is really struggling with addictions, to open up the lines of communication between themselves and the addict in an effort to help not only the addict, because, you know, the addict has to help him or herself, but in order to help themselves as well, to open up the lines of communication with other parents or, you know, siblings, whoever you are, and you're dealing with loving an addict.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's one of my missions in life, to help folks again, feel more confident and comfortable in their own skin, mm-hmm. whether or not they're dealing with something really life-altering like that, or they're just doing their best to live their strongest, most powerful life. Right. Because as we know, like, you know, kids get out of college these days. Mm-hmm. If they're versed in technology, yes, you know, that gives them power. And they're able to do so much more if they're versed in technology. If they have business skills, they're able to do so much more. And man...